This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is David Moyes.
This is Jaap Stam.
This is Bruno Lage.
This is Ryan Fraser.
This is Troy Deeney.
This is Gus Poyet.
This is Don Hutchison.
This is Jurgen Klopp, and you're listening to The Big Interview with Graham Hunter.
Thank you, Jurgen. I travel to all these interviews from Barcelona, and our socios, our beloved members, keep us on the road. This independent podcast wouldn't happen without them. Please go to patreon.com/Graham Hunter right now to join us, to become a socio, and to get every interview we produce without adverts and before it goes out on the main feed, plus lots of bonus content, including the chance to put questions to our guests and to me via the monthly Q&A. So do please go to patreon.com/Graham Hunter and join the club and get your family and friends to do so. Maybe even strangers in the street. Love you.
So many guests during our 7 years that we've enjoyed speaking to, that I guess it's a surprise that we've only ever repeated Kevin Bridges, Jamie Carragher, and now David Moyes. We went to St Andrews to meet the West Ham manager. He was in good form. We talked about pre-season, what it means now, and what it meant back then. Stories of army boot camps, afternoon bevying, and now we're talking more about quiz nights, plus spaghetti and marshmallow castles. No, I've no real idea either, but if you listen, you'll find out. David talks about grafting style onto his core values, how he wants entertainment as well as success. In his own words, I want better teams. I want better football. Sit back and enjoy listening to David Moyes describe how he's been building a new version of West Ham.
Listeners, this is the strangest interview I've ever done, because we've just broken in. We're midway through a conversation with David Moyes. We're here in St Andrews. David, thank you very much. And thank you for being only the second guest in 130-odd big interviews. You and Kevin Bridges, it's either something to be Scottish or something to do with being talented, which is what I like.
Well, I've got to say, Kevin Bridges is unbelievable,
you
know, isn't he?
You've got a similar sense of humour, the two of you. I think you're up there.
He's fantastic, Kevin Bridges. I love him to death, I really do. So.
Well, you were interview number four, I think. There was Gary Neville, Wee Gordon Strachan, and just by coincidence, Gordon was here today. And he literally said he came over from Dundee, and they're going a wee walk, him and Leslie Armstrong. And he said, tell David, my putting's better.
His putting's better. we played in a competition at Glen Eagles, me and Gordon, and his putting was brutal. but he had the yips, you know. So, and he was actually, Gordon was a decent golfer. So,
but he
really
said,
good.
He literally said that you'd given him a couple of tips, because he said, honestly, he has made, and I was like, Gordon, I thought you were joking. No, tell him. So I think he wants that foursome back on again.
He gave me plenty of tips about the football. That was what I needed.
He was a great player. He was a mighty dandy.
He was.
Look, David, one of the reasons that we asked you to, apart from friendship, I've hugely enjoyed, and I suspect knowing our listeners, they'll have hugely enjoyed, amongst the many things that you've done at West Ham, I think they'll have hugely enjoyed watching you enjoy yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to come to that. But I wonder if this is enjoyable now. You're in a wonderful place. But pre-season must be a brute. Players talk about how it's tough and all that kind of stuff. But for a manager and his coaches and his data scientists and his fitness people to be able to say these dates, this place, this temperature, this workload, particularly after 2 years whereby the COVID pandemic meant that games got all the more crushed, you've been successful, so the workload went up. We're facing a year, ridiculously, with a World Cup in November. All these pile problems upon your strategic ability before a ball's even kicked in anger this season. What are the challenges, say particularly this pre-season, you and your staff face, and how have you addressed them?
Well, you've summed it up right away. The job is really brutal now. The amount of work to be done is incredible. But we're really lucky. So we're lucky in the job. But what I would say is, the pre-season for the managers is probably the best time because the pressure's off as far as the results go. You've not got any great hit. But where the pressure comes is, can you get the preparation right, the organisation right, the training right? And actually, we're all in the middle of the transfer window as well, so we're all trying to add players to the team. But what you said is, for the people who don't know, we're at St Andrews. No, they're about to play the British Open here, the 150th British Open. It's a fantastic location for us. Being Scottish, it makes it really easy for me to come up here. But I brought Real Sociedad here as well. And it was the last time I came with Real Sociedad, it was before the last British Open here. And the players will tell you from Sociedad, it was a week just before the opening, the golfers were walking in here and Tiger was here and the players were getting up and asking Tiger for their autograph and that. And I got a message back saying, would you please ask your players to... Tiger doesn't want to sign anymore, so I doesn't want to sign any more autographs. So I had that.
I never liked him anyway.
No. So we had, but so I've been coming here a while. I don't know if you remember years back when Pep used to bring Barcelona here as well.
2008.
Yeah. So we've stayed here, but prior to when I was a younger coach and a younger manager, I used to bring Preston North End here, but we had to stay at the hotel further up the hill because this was too expensive. So we stayed budgets. Up the hill, budgets. And then Everton. So I've always found it somewhere for 5-6 days at the start of it quite good. But look, it's a great place which makes things easy. The players get well looked after, well treated. The facilities we've got, the pitches we've got are good. So I've got to say this is a really good week for me and I can sort of half relax and not be too wound up.
Okay, before we talk about the goals of fitness and freshening, because we live in an era of perma-fit players. You and I were born in the same year, so therefore we grew up.
I mean, you're going to say we were the same pair.
You've had slightly more success in the football world, I'd be willing to give you.
Yeah.
But we're of the same generation, therefore we did grow up, and you probably grew up training with people who, at that stage, thought it was okay to be 2-3 kilos over, because it wasn't. Eden Hazard did it recently when he moved from Chelsea to Real Madrid. But there would be several. I grew up worshipping King Joey Harper.
Yeah.
Joey changed shape pre-season to season. Now... No, there's almost none of that. It's perma-fit players. So presumably, and there's one player in the celebration of your 1,000th game, congratulations for
Thank
that,
you.
Which was earlier this season in Europe, and a victory as well, I want to note.
Thank you.
Who said, with David, you've got to be fit to get fit. You have to be fit for pre-season training because you push players. What are your objectives over these next couple of weeks before the season starts?
Well, let me answer the first thing that really about is this. Yeah, I agree. I don't think players are coming back now in the condition they were years ago. I think it was normal for players to come back a bit overweight, lose the weight. It used to be the bin bag culture. Players would
sweat it out.
And I was actually laughing with Billy McKinley there. We were saying is, you know, nearly everybody came back overweight at that time. You know, and it was a case of getting the weight off and all those things. But the players are incredibly fit. You know, I think we've got one player who's come back slightly overweight, but the rest of them are all good. So I think it has changed. But yeah, I think there's been a period now just coming back where we've introduced some of the best overseas managers to the Premier League. So Jurgen Klopp, Pochettino, for example, Pep, you know, some of those managers, you know, their reputations are that they work their players really, really hard. No. And it used to be, you know, if it was the British managers were doing that, hey, wait a minute, you're a bit of a dinosaur, you should be getting more touches of the ball, you're doing too much.
True.
And actually now, if you look at the Premier League, the speed of it, mm-hmm. You've got to have a diesel engine, you've got to be able to continually run, you've got to be, the intensity of the game in the Premier League is probably what people talk about.
Definitely.
Hugely.
Definitely.
So now, how do you train intensity? How do you get them in those conditions to do that? And I think that, I'm not saying that we were a wee bit, maybe too much the one way. I think now we've become much better. Most of the work is done with the ball. Most of the intensity is done with the ball. Of course, you still have to find other ways of doing running, which is similar to what they do in the pitch. But the players are back in great shape now, Graham. They really are. They're top.
When we spoke in San Sebastian, and I might do this a couple of times, you gave a really good answer. I think in the era's gone by, a lot of young players developed with a great deal of coaching, whereas we're now in a world of football where there's a great deal more coaching, a lot of different coaches available, more hours put into the player. And you said, I think that there's a lot more strategy generally, more thought, more science. The science in sport has now gone to an incredible level, and I can only see it getting better. Presumably, albeit that your gap, the gap for Kevin, for Billy, your gap to rest is really small. Presumably some of the planning you put into how much you're going to ask of your players, given you almost had to scrape them out of last season because you were successful and because there was so much travel and the Europa League's a long tournament. You've got a gap coming up that not all your players will be at the World Cup. So you must have used a lot of science as well as a lot of experience and instinct to plan for what you do in midsummer.
Yeah, we do. We're planning just now for... I mean, even... Like you said, we finished the season with an incredible programme last year. And you have an incredible programme if you're successful. If you're not successful, then you have a normal programme. So that's something we hope to get used to and we want more of. But yeah, we are planning. We're planning greatly for the World Cup. What we're going to do with the players who are not at the World Cup. We're planning greatly for this pre-season. We've had offers to go to different parts of the world. With West Ham, we're a bit more in vogue now, where people are more interested in taking West Ham, and look, I'm really keen that West Ham go out there and show what we can do, but I'm also trying to keep control in a way where I want the training to be right. I still think that we're just growing as a team and as a club, and I want us to try and be successful again in the Premier League next year, so I don't want us to drop away. We finished 7th, we were 6th the year before. So for us to do that, I feel as if I can try and get the right preparation, it'll be the right thing.
I wonder how much is it feasible, and again, I'm never looking for sort of super inside stories, but to get to know your players, particularly a man manager of your skills, when there aren't games and when you're away from home and there's no kids, no wives, there's a chance to either get to know them or test them. In the old days, there was a lot of larks. There was a lot of... I don't know if you ever participated yourself in...
Many.
I think we can get away from beating curfew. There has to be something on that side about larks, some relaxation. Mm-hmm. I don't know, golf maybe. But also you getting to know them individually.
Yeah. Well, I think that even that... I think the players now are quite happy in their own company at times. We try to have a really good team spirit, and we have not just a team, a club spirit. Now I'm trying to make sure that we can generate it all through the club. But the players, look, there's been loads of things that go on. I've got to say, Stuart Pearce, who we had, was brilliant. We had quiz nights, and I'm saying, I don't want to do a quiz night, Pearce. But Pearce was good at them, and Pearce, it would have the music.
It would have all been punk music questions, wasn't it?
And by the end of the night, we'd all be in teams, and we had this quite a lot last year in the hotels, and we were having food fights and fun, stuff like building spaghetti and marshmallow castles and stuff like that. So there's lots of things which are really simple, which were probably done 30, 40 years ago with team spirit. But I think there's less and less drink-orientated team spirit now, with different people with different religious backgrounds and different types. So I don't think it's where we used to always go out and get drunk, and that was the way to do it.
Who were the great curfew breakers of your day?
I've had many, not curfew breakers, but I've always been pretty strict. But when I went away, I used to always say to the players, away you go, and I'll see you tomorrow morning. Because the more rules you give players, the worse it gets. But I've got to say, as being a young manager, the nights I can remember, waiting and the boys coming in and seeing if they're all going to make the time and that. So when you're a young coach in those days, and you'll know what I'm talking about, because it was a different time, it was a different era for that. But the early days at Preston North End, when We didn't go far, but we used to take them to Nice. We used to fly down to Nice and have a few days. But what we'd do is we'd run along the front, so we didn't really live any. We'd just take them away, give them a couple of days, and I'd let them out, and I'd say, hey, you know, back in for midnight or back in for 1 o'clock. And you were kidding yourself, on. I've got to tell you, the worst one was, we took them to Nice. I think it was the first time. And I had gone to one of the directors. I said, I'd like them to buy them tickets to go and see Monaco. Monaco were playing, I don't know, Nice or Lille. I can't remember who they're playing. And the tickets were maybe 25. So it was quite a lot of money for press at the time. So bought 30 tickets for all the players and everybody. So we'd been down. The players had been out all afternoon. And the bus is leaving at 6 o'clock to take us through. And I get a call from the captain saying, boss, the players don't really want to go to the game. And I'm saying, get yourself back here. I had to get these tickets and buy these tickets. He says, aye, okay then. Half an hour later, boss, the boys are no real. I says, look, if they're not back here, they're getting it. Anyway, they're all back. And we get them on the bus to Monaco. And obviously, they've all been out in the afternoon. Get to Monaco and give them their tickets for the game and walk in the game. Half of them never went into the game. They went to the bar outside.
Right around the tent.
And I'm coming back and I'm asking them about the game in the bus. In the back, none of them had went into the game. Brilliant. So all those things, when you were a young manager, you found it. But it's not like that now, I've got to say. It's different. And actually, the sort of the level we're at as well, the level of professionalism is incredibly high.
The worst pre-season we've had in this chat was with Eddie Howe, who was at Bournemouth, and he talked about having had an idea to take them off to some Norwegian island to learn team spirit and self-sufficiency. And they were all to build tents. I suppose it became a reality series of its own. They were all to build tents and cook their own food. And of course, there was an attack of midges. There was sort of record high temperatures. Everybody got contaminated from cooking their own food. And the thing was a complete... It was coming out of both ends. And he was like, never again.
Can I tell you now when you're brought them on? Tell you now what I've got to tell you is... And it wasn't actually a pre-season trip. We'd started my first season at Preston. We'd gone top of the league. Gone top of the league at Preston. And I thought, these buggers are getting ahead of themselves. The big-time Charlies think that they know it all. And it was coming up for the Christmas night out. And we were playing, I can remember, we were playing Notts County in Nottingham. And Nottingham was a good night out and whatnot. I thought, well, good, away from Preston. I'll give them their Christmas night out in Nottingham. But I said to him, I says, I'm going to take you away for a few days after. So I could hear them in the bus up the back saying, I'll be Mallorca or something like that. And I'd said to them, would you bring your passports? And the players were saying, and I could hear them saying, nah, he'll be taking us to a training camp in Germany. He'll not be taking us to Mallorca. So I'd said, we'll play Notts County, you'll have your night out. And I didn't tell them where they were going. And actually, I think we scored in the last minute at Notts County to win or to draw. And I was letting them out. But I had booked the army camp up between Middlesbrough and Sunderland. And I had gone up and done a recce. And I had gone into it and I'd said to the guy, I want this as squalid as you can make it. I want those itchy blankets.
Oh, brilliant.
I want them up. So we've got a result. We're going top of the league. And I said to him, right, you have got ahead of yourselves. You can get the night out the night, and then we're up to the army camp in the morning. So they were on the bus at some 7 o'clock in the morning. They were carrying the logs over their shoulder. We were eating with all the soldiers in the thing. And I'm thinking, I'm going to show you that this is the way it goes. I said, I don't mind you having a few drinks. It was around Christmas time, we're having a break. So they came into the officer's mess. They were allowed in the officer's mess at night. But they were bladdered. But I'm saying, I'm not caring because yous are running your nuts off the next day, and they were running, the soldiers were taking them through the stuff. Captain's coming again, he says, look, boss, the boys are going mad, they're hating it. I think my captain was Sean Gregan at the time, and he said, oh, well, come on, boss. I says, no, you get at it. So next night, they're in the officer's mess again, bladdered again, and I'm saying, wait a minute, I'm not getting what I want out of this. So I went and phoned the bus company. I says, get the bus back and we'll take them out of here. After about 2 days, I had to get them out. And I took them out the army camp. But being a young manager at that time, it was the things like, I wasn't naive, but I was trying to, they were the things we were doing. And when I look back now, I'm saying lots of young managers will need a chance and will make mistakes and maybe yeah. not make the right decisions. And they weren't the right decisions. But I was trying to make it for what I thought were the right reasons.
And it showed creativity, I think.
And at that time, you were a bit... the boys who were there, they'll tell you the story, and we were running through the mud and the water and all sorts.
Fairness or not, whether it worked for the football, they could have defended the stadium if we were invaded. That would have been... Yeah.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tom Lee's our socio who's supported us since the couple of interviews just before you spoke this in San Sebastian. And Tom said, I think I'm right in saying that David has studied other sports and forged links, for example, with the top Australian rugby league coach, Ian Basil Millward. Mm-hmm. David, what have you learned? He just asked, learned, used, carried over from that or similar relationships outside football maybe that have helped your current methods of managing and coaching?
Hugely.
Yeah.
Hugely trying to find it. I mean, it's very difficult to actually get in, which sometimes correlates with your own. But Ian Milner was a great guy. He brought St Helens rugby up to Everton, up to the training ground, and we were putting on a football session for them. And our plan was to go to St Helens to have a rugby session, you know. And we interacted quite a lot at the time about, you know, what worked. And he gave me a lot of good things as well, talked about a lot of good things. But the rugby boys were fantastic, you know. At that time, you know, we were really just getting used to drinking out of water bottles and stuff like that, and the players were scrawling the bottles everywhere, you know. The rugby players picked everything up. They'd done the work. They said, thank you very much. They shook your hand. It was a completely different sort of
type. The culture was different?
The culture was different with the rugby boys. But where I've moved on to now, Graham, is I'm really fortunate I'm part of a leaders in sport group which has got... No, the baseball people, the American football, cyclists, David Brailsford, we've got Gareth Southgate's part of it, and we're part of a really good team, Roberto Martinez. There's lots of people were involved, and we're hearing about the different sports and interaction and how they work, and you know, and the best sort of leaders out there and how things are going and motivation and whatnot. And I've got to say, it's helped me an awful lot, because I think when you get a bit older, you're always looking to try and find new things to inspire you and new things which, you know, and even the last couple of years, I've you know, sort of felt invigorated again. I feel as if, you know, I'm saying, hey, I'm right at it at the moment. But it's good that, but you still need to try and improve as a manager, you're still trying to improve as a man. Even coaching and leadership now, how it's changed, and one of the things we talked about the last time we spoke was how much sort of the sports sciences come on. All those things have developed, so it's given you you've had to sort of keep up with it and move on with it.
Which is an onslaught of things coming at you at a time when you're actually mad busy on the things that are your core business.
That's right. And really, it's nearly going through a learning process. You know, it really is. You know, some of the things in the hours now where the managers and the coaches are spending through analytics work, you know, whether it be regarding signing players, whether it be, you know, looking at the opposition or your own team, you know, we can video our own training, you can, you know, you can watch the opposition. So there's so much
more. So you have to be sharp at how to limit that inflow, any of that information you've just been talking about, because you can't afford to be deluged.
No. And what I've done probably, if you said, well, how have you coped a little bit with that, I've said is, I've decided to have a bigger staff, a bigger coaching staff, where I feel as if I want to put people in who can add value to me. It means that some of the analytics can be done by another member of staff. Somebody else can be, you know, maybe studying longer about maybe the opposition or the opponent. Somebody else can be taking on, help me prep the training, where we're going with our work, what's our load, what's our scheduling over the next month.
You know, how was that delegation to begin with? Because one of the things that began your ascent at Preston was attention to detail and doing everything, and it's stayed with you. You know, I've experienced it in phone calls we've had about your intense attention to detail. And when you're like that, to delegate, even if the people around you are handpicked and trusted, I don't think it's ever that easy.
No, it's not. That was always the people who were around me. Probably, if MD always said there was a fault, they said I need to delegate better and hand over and maybe not take things on. But I think now I have. I think maybe age gives you a little bit, as we all know, a bit more experience, and you look back at it. And also, your energy. You know, I'm not saying energy diminishes, but you've not quite got the same energy as what you had when you were, you know, 40 years old to where you are. So I've got to say, it's not been easy, but I think once you start to trust and you've seen other people working, and what I want it always to be is them putting over the work I want put over, because If I'm going to lose my job, which I have done many times, I would want it to be because it's the way I've tried to do it and what I've wanted.
Okay, that links me to something. I might get the wrong game, so pardon me.
Right,
because your memory's good. I was at home in Barcelona watching a game. I'm certain it was in the restart season. You were back at West Ham, and my memory tells me it was in the July, and I think it was a 3-1 home win against Watford. Mm-hmm. A couple of weeks before that, you had a 1-0 home defeat to Burnley. And I remember watching the interview, and you were like, that's why I think it was a 3-1 win over Watford. You're like, I don't care. They didn't play the way I want them to play. You didn't say they were shit.
No.
You're like, they didn't play the way I want them to play. Now, across your career watching you, of course I didn't see much of Preston because I was doing other things at the time. But I feel that there's been a change in your mindset and what you want from your team. Maybe not a massive change, but between Everton and West Ham. Mm-hmm. Core values similar.
Yeah.
But it feels to me, like you said, no, now I want this. Now I've learned and I want this. And that day, despite a win, you were disappointed that the... Now, the style of football is something I said to you on the phone. I've been huge. I will go and seek your teams out. Mm-hmm. Before, I was happy watching. I was proud. You know, when you should have knocked Villarreal out of the qualifier, when you got up there, when you were dragging them away from the bottom, that was all enjoyable and proud. And there was a clarity of how your teams worked and how your tactics worked. Now it feels like you've gone, I tell you what I want a little bit extra on the top. Is that true? And do you remember, whenever that interview was, do you remember saying, a win's a win, but I'm not happy with how they played?
No, I do remember what you're saying, but I believe I've changed greatly. Not greatly. Because I've not got the core values. No, we started talking about pre-season here. My core values are still quite similar, but I think my teams. I want better teams. I want better, not better football. That would be wrong to say it. You have to remember, nearly all the Everton teams I had finished in Europe football, just outside it, on the verge, probably in the top eight every year. So to be in the top eight of the Premier League at any time, you know, whether it be that year or whatever year, is some doing. You know, we're celebrating here at West Ham finishing sixth and seventh because we think that's pretty good. So to be in and around that for the best part of 10 years, you've got to be doing something, I would hope, right. I go back to where I started at Celtic. It was only one where you had to play, you had to entertain, you had to win, you had to score lots of goals. And that's the way I feel as I've been brought up, and that's what I want to watch. But I think when you're manager, you actually say, well, wait a minute, how am I going to win? What are the players have I got? But I think at West Ham, the players have got to help helped me as well. But my intention when I come back, the second time, I said, no, I'm going to give this a go, because it might have been my last time. Who knows? I'd had a couple of cops, hadn't quite worked. So I probably thought, this might be, I'm nearly having to throw my ace card on the table here and see how this goes and gamble and take a few risks. And I think the risks have paid off, and, you know, it's the way I want to be. I want to challenge the top managers, the top elite teams, and I want to see if we can stay in and around the top.
But within that, am I wrong in venturing, based on what you said, words like entertainment and flair? Because I know you still have to press and win the ball back and defend, and you want to see brains on the pitch, and you'll have certain rules at set plays, defending, attacking. However, it feels to me as if you've both sought out players who might thrill as well as doing a job. It also seems that when you said gamble a little bit, all in, it's all in on, I tell you what, I want to do this, and I want to make people go, oh yeah, boy, I enjoyed that, I'm coming back, or a kid to go, Dad, I'd like to go to the football this week.
Yeah, look, I've got to say, I've really enjoyed it. I've sat back and I've gone, wow, bloody hell, we scored 4 goals here, we scored 5 goals, we're playing well, we're a good team to watch. By the way, I'm not kidding, there's a lot and I enjoy it. I think the West Ham supporters have actually said, by the way, I quite enjoy that. This is actually, you know, we're actually coming to see something which is decent to watch. But all managers need good players to make that happen. You know, if you get in a job, most managers get given jobs when they're probably the manager's been sacked before, probably not doing so well. Not everybody gets pushed right into one of the top jobs. And it takes you time maybe to get something you want. So I was really lucky when we brought in a couple of the Czech boys, not because they were super, super talented, but they had super enthusiasm, energy. And I think a lot of people want to see that they feel as if they're getting 100%. Then we've added a little bit. Declan Rice has developed into a top footballing player. Ike Antonio changed from being a wide player to a centre forward.
Best football of his life.
Best football, best time in his career. But also, all these things, sometimes you need everything to align and to work for you. And they've gone that way, but it's given me a great lift. Great lift.
I said to you on the phone, I saw you enjoying yourself. And I was like, and it isn't simply sticking it to people or the potential of winning a trophy, which was clear over the last two seasons.
Yeah.
And it's clear that with the right work this summer, you're probably going to go closer still.
Yeah.
Did it help, however odd it was? And football fans are the fundament of why we play the game, without the passion. Did it help, particularly given that the fans weren't enchanted with the stadium, to have a little bit of peace and quiet at first to work?
You know something? I think it probably did, that we were able to stand back and probably make the decisions without any interference, if that sounds. No managers are dictated by the support, but they play a huge part in the game. You mean, we talk about, you know, how clubs can have a big European night and stuff. Well, they play a big part of that. So for us to go with no supporters maybe for a while gave us a chance to actually do a bit better at the London Stadium.
Yeah.
So by the time we've brought the supporters back now, we've actually got a good team and they're coming back. And whereas maybe in the past, maybe they're saying, hey, maybe the London Stadium we're not so keen on, the football's the more important thing. We're focusing on the football. I think for us, it gave me a bit of time as well to, you know, maybe to be out of the spotlight where there was lots of people having lots of opinions. Certainly we were still in the media every week because they were writing stories, whether you were good or bad. But I think in that time it gave us a little bit of chance to settle.
Well, I'm going to ask you about West Ham. Again, I'll say that, you know, we were born the same year, so we must have similar memories of our first visions of West Ham, or which players or which matches stick in our minds from watching on the TV in Scotland, whatever. But there's a ferocity about the West Ham support, one which I like. That silent period when it's sad because of the pandemic, it's sad because we need fans at clubs.
Yeah,
did it also help players go, I'm going to trust the boss, I'm going to try this move, I'm going to do a little bit extra?
I think we needed a little bit of that period to sort of give the team a chance to grow. So it was a bit like maybe, you know, going on a stage. You know, if you don't really have an act, don't go on stage. We maybe didn't have an act yet ready, quite ready. We were improving. We were trying. We'd avoided relegation, which was great. So we needed to get the act before we brought the supporters back in to see us. And I think by the time the supporters came back in, they were nearly begging to get into the ground because how well we were doing.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were missing out on great games at our place. Look, I think that might have helped. But I've got to say, you mentioned the West Ham supporters there. I couldn't tell you everything about West Ham because it's not where I come from, it's not where I've been. But I feel as if they've needed to be brightened up as well. They've needed a change, you know. And I do, and I keep using the word sometimes, the new West Ham. I don't use that because I'm in any way trying to forget the past, but I'm trying to get them where they put them in a pathway. Now, I'll not be at West Ham forever, you know, there are other people, but a new pathway, there's a new stadium. We've got unbelievable amount of young supporters coming with their strips on, and Declan Rice in the back, and you know, Thomas Suchet. And I think that the club, you know, in the East End of London is a huge part of the community. Huge. And look, I think there was a few more smiles in the faces in East End of London. And let's be fair, we've all come through a shitty time in life for everybody. And especially in East End of London, because there's a lot of things there which aren't as good. And maybe the team just helped a little bit. So
does it fit a little bit the old West Ham idea about, okay, working class area, hard work on the pitch, but also excitement, enjoyment, passionate support? I'm not going to say Everton and West Ham are identical at all, but both of them really fit with your personality and how you grew up.
I think so. And I think as well as I think the people, first of all, most of the people want honesty.
Yeah.
They want to know good they've work. Got honest and committed players, hard working. I mean, now then what they want is, hey, by the way, can you get some talented flair players? I mean, West Ham have had Paye, for example, over the years. They've had some unbelievable talented players. But, you know, if you try to bring in all the talent too quick and you don't have the foundations and you haven't done the groundwork and you haven't got the sort of labourers there who are going to help them. And I think maybe West Ham tried to do that a couple of years ago. I thought they brought in a lot of really good talent. But I don't know if they had the real foundations down. Mm-hmm. No, I don't know. That's only from a distance. But what I do know at my time at Everton, I didn't really have the finances to do that. So it was a case of trying to put a building block on and try to build up and try to get a team which found a ways of winning, like we talked about. But I actually think now we've got a good enough team to play with a bit of flair, a bit of style. A year ago, our counter-attack play was unbelievable. Yeah. What we found now is teams that have actually dropped off and we can't. We're counter-attack's not as good, so we're having to find a way of being a better footballing team. So all these things are tests for us all, you know, coaches and for the players.
And it'd be nice to maybe have a jack-in-the-box player that when a team sat deep that just could. Plays in... What was it Gary Mack used at Rangers about Hadji? He just said he plays in inches and millimetres.
Yeah.
So it's just okay. Like open. Every team that has to play against bank defences needs somebody, a magician that does something and opens them up.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.